The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Jennifer Gannon and Louise Duffy are with us to talk television issues. But before we talk about Ant McPartlin, who we heard about in the 6 o'clock news, is now facing charges for drunk driving, let's just get a flavour of Ant and Dec and what it is that has made them so popular. This is taken from I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and it's them talking about their love of emojis.
We would have been good at that, like.
Yeah, we would, actually.
We're constantly sending each other emojis.
We are all the time. He always sends me that crying, laughing face when I text him something hilarious.
Yeah, he sends me the winking face when I send him something cheeky.
Yeah, and he sends me the aubergine one when he's run out of aubergines and he's making a delicious moussaka.
Yeah. I make a lot of moussakas.
Right, I say they sent each other quite a few beers and wines emojis as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Controversial.
Any sympathy for Ant McPartlin?
It would be hard to have sympathy for him. Up to this point, up until Sunday or whenever he got behind the wheel of a car with drink in his system, you could have sympathy for him and you could say, look, you know, he's going through a lot and a marriage breakdown and addiction problems, obviously. But I think, you know, that has to cease once he gets in the car and he puts other people in danger. I think, you know...
And it was a three-year-old in the car that he smashed into
but there is still sympathy for him, you know, publicly. Yeah. And then I think it brings up a whole question of why? I mean, why are people sympathetic towards something? I think it's deplorable to drink drive, be it the morning after or whenever it is. He committed a grave offence and there is still a smattering of sympathy towards him. And then Jamie Carragher, we could compare it to that the week before, did something disgusting, but I wouldn't say it would be in the same league.
Putting lives in danger.
Yeah, you know.
And there was immediately a mob campaign to get him off the air. Jennifer.
I think with Ant, he is just a beloved, you know, character. And I think, you know, people, Ant and Dec have been in a partnership on television and a friendship for over 28 years at this stage, and people have grown up with them. And I do think that misplaced affection is what is, you know, putting forward now. I mean, after this latest incident, even though it is shocking, I still think people have sympathy for him. But I think the whole thing is, the question is now, is what's going to happen to Dec? And I know
Dec do it on his own?
I think that, like, they had a pact that said that they would never appear on TV without each other, and that has to change now. And I know Piers Morgan was weighing in, as he's wanted to do.
Why does he want to take over from
Probably.
That?
Probably. Old Porkchop Futures was saying that on Good Morning Britain that, you know, Dec really needs to consider his career options now. And I think he's right, because you've got stuff like, you know, Britain's Got Talent is coming up and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And what, you know, and the future of Saturday Night Takeaway and the future of their partnership, that's what's hanging in the balance.
It's the interaction. It's the sort of the
people love that real friendship. And you know that it's a genuine friendship because you know that they are kind of in tune with each other and they can tell, you know, what line is coming next and where to go. And I think with Dec, they've made the decision not to do this week's Saturday Night Takeaway, but they are going to do the two finale episodes.
Which strikes me, Louise, as for contractual reasons, because the finale is supposed to be in Universal Orlando that they were flying over to. There was probably so much money tied up in the final programmes that they probably told Declan Donnelly, you do it, mate.
There's no choice about it. But I think they're strong enough presenters individually. You know, I mean, obviously...
Have we ever seen them individually?
But I don't think they are, though. I think they're the sum of their parts, and their parts are small guy and guy with massive forehead, and they just amuse each other, and they're just a double act. They're a quintessential double act. So what I think they should do is have Dec on with someone he feels comfortable with, like Kat Deely, who he worked with on SMTV, and the fans will feel comfortable seeing him with, rather than putting him with somebody that's on a lower echelon or, you know, isn't of the same vintage. Yeah. Or maybe even have someone who's a, you know, consummate professional like Rylan take over. I think he'd be brilliant with him.
I would rather see him a solo rather than trying to put somebody else
He's
in.
Too bland.
I mean, we haven't seen them solo, but they certainly have their own charm individually. Yeah, absolutely. The interaction is very important and it's what it's all about. But I'd be very interested to see how he fares alone.
See, they work on the basis of one provides the punchline
and the other becomes the straight man, and then they swap it over. And, you know, if you see them for so long, you know what it is, the cogs behind it. That's why I think to maybe freshen up Dec or keep him on his toes, they should draft in someone like Kat or someone, as I said, like Rylan, someone that could keep up with him, or challenge him. And I think that might be a new lease of life for him.
Okay.
I think it would never be as good, and then that false kind of forced rapport is the worst thing to watch on TV.
But I think Kat Deely would have a great rapport because they've worked together for so long, for years, and the fans would actually, old SMTV fans would probably tune in just to see that. But I do think forcing him to be on his own, there's always going to be that empty space where Ant should be. And as I said, Dec is pretty bland on his own.
Mm. Okay. Have you been, Louise, watching either of the big shiny floor shows which have been running on Irish television, which come to their conclusion this week? The final of Dancing with the Stars on Sunday night in RT, and the semi-finals tonight and tomorrow night of Ireland's Got Talent on TV3, and the final on Saturday night. Have these captured your imagination?
Well, I would say I've been keeping a nice eye on Dancing with the Stars. Ireland's Got Talent, I haven't. But Jen, you're a big fan, but I just haven't got into it really. I think I'm just exhausted with all of the talent shows. I think when you can see celebrities trying their hand at it, that's kind of keeping me engaged. So Dancing with the Stars is one that I'll be watching.
They're not even really celebrities though. I mean, last week we had like somebody's sister versus somebody's brother, like as in celebrities. So you had like Jake Carter, who's, you know, the other Carter that's not, you know,
not the famous Carter.
And then you had Erin McGregor, who's Conor McGregor's sister, and you had them against each other. And you know what people want to see is Conor McGregor versus Nathan Carter, maybe not in a ring, but maybe on the dance floor. And we're not getting that. And I think with Dancing with the Stars, it goes on for very long
time. It is too long, absolutely.
And it's completely humorless. It's very humorless, except for Nicky Byrne's really bad jokes. But like something with like Ireland's Got Talent, I think is genuinely hilarious and very, it's very Irish, as in like you have someone that ended up getting, some El lad got into the semi-final singing Give Me Hope, Joanna, which, like, you know, everybody's used to of any kind of drunken uncle singing at some kind of family reception, but with Judge Michelle Visage, has never witnessed this before, and she thought, wow, this is amazing, a song about like South African freedom being sung in Ireland. And we were all like, no, Larry Gogan used to play it every weekend in the 80s, and you know, and it was just funny to see that culture clash and to have those little bits of parochialism.
But the panel has really worked well, hasn't it?
Brilliant.
On Ireland's Got Talent,
I think Jason Byrne is great, and I think his interactions with the rest of the panel, they work so well together. And I think someone like Denise Van Outen, who I wasn't too sure of, she has got those West End credentials, and she is a really tough judge, but she's good, she's fair. And I think, you know, not only does it have those barroom singers, but it's also got these, you know, modern Ireland, which has like loads of dance troupes, has this brilliant Vogan dancer, Zach Milne. I think he's amazing. Or somebody as good, who we all know in the drag world in Ireland, a performer like Paul Ryder, who unfortunately missed out on the final. He went on Monday, but hopefully Michelle will have him as his wild card, because I think he's really interesting to watch.
Okay, I watched, when I say watched, I was sitting in the room on my laptop looking up and down at Dancing with the Stars on Sunday night, and the one thing that strikes me seems to go on forever.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
It ends.
And recap after recap after recap. Like I say, I watch it, but the only way I watch it is an hour later so I can skip through all the bull. Like, there's an awful lot of it, and a lot of forced interviews, but I really enjoy the skill of it, and you know, watching
the actual
progression.
Dancing itself.
Yeah, that's what I watch it for, and there's a lot of skill and a lot of talent required. And the actual professional dancers are mind-blowing. When they perform as a troupe, they are mind-blown in their, you know, in their routines.
Some interesting text messages coming in. Here's one. Mob campaign to get rid of Jamie Carragher from Sky. Meanwhile, Sky employs a convicted drunk driver, Kirsty Gallagher, on Sky Sports, and had another, Wayne Rooney, as a special guest recently.
So there you go. I think that's a really important
point. It's double standards, isn't it? Depending on how famous you are.
Well, this is it. But I mean, you could say that for anything. You could say that in Hollywood, you know, it's the same thing where you have someone like Gary Oldman being given an Oscar, and then it's all, you know, the surrounding fury over the Me Too movement. So, I mean, it happens everywhere. There's just double standards throughout the entertainment business. Like,
another listener says, Anton Savage could replace Ant, and then they could have Ant on deck.
I love that.
Perfect.
Okay, I'll get on to Anton, and we'll act as his agent to try and get that one sorted out.
Make sure he gets the same fee.
Another one says that they'd pay serious money to see a dance-off between Nathan Carter and Conor McGregor.
So yes, would
indeed.
I.
Yes, indeed. Okay. And another one says that Kat Deely featured on the last show in Florida in last year's with Ant and Dec. So there's a few people suggesting things like that. Louise, apparently Netflix is under criticism for allegedly glamorising smoking.
Yeah.
How?
There is a campaign, a Truth Initiative, a US public health organization. They went into extreme detail and counted the amount of tobacco incidents which feature in various Netflix productions. So a tobacco incident is a scene that features smoking or a cigarette or whatever it is. So Stranger Things topped the list with 182 scenes featuring cigarettes. The Walking Dead after that, Orange is the New Black and so on. And they're saying that it's glamorizing smoking, that it is, I suppose, we're trying to stamp out the normalization of smoking and working very hard to do that. And then when a former smoker sits in front of the screen and sees somebody smoking, there has been research that proves that it triggers something in you and it, you know, it reignites that desire to smoke.
I've noticed it because I'm rewatching House of Cards at present and they sort of gave up smoking, the power couple.
That's why they're going to murdering people.
Yes, exactly.
Head to the fridge.
Sitting out the window smoking their cigarette, having killed somebody else. But isn't it true to sort of the times in certain things? Like The Crown, for example, has to have loads of smoking.
Princess Margaret always has a cigarette in her hand. Mm-hmm. And I think those kind of shows like Stranger Things is in the 80s. And then they were, you know, saying it about Mad Men too. They're all period pieces and they all would have smoking, you know, generally in that era. But I think The Crown stopped short of having Princess Margaret smoke during her pregnancy, which was something that did happen at the time. And they just said that was a step too far. So they are kind of adhering to, you know, the rules. But I think, you know, screenwriters, you have to be true to the time that, you know, these events were happening. So I don't think it's, none of these shows are aimed at children except for Stranger Things. And I think with Stranger Things, the only person that really, you know, chain smokes is Winona Ryder's character, Joyce Byers. And that was a nervous tick because she had, you know, her son was missing. And I don't think anybody is actually glamorizing it to, you know, young teens or anything. Mm. None of the teens in the show or the young kids in the show smoke, obviously. And I think with something, criticism for, like, they had criticism for making a murderer. That's a documentary. I mean, how are you supposed to control how real people react and what actions that real people want to take? Like,
Peaky Blinders is another major offender. I think that Tommy Shelby smoked, or Cillian Murphy asked the prop department to count how many herbal cigarettes he went through in one series, and it was 3,000 of these nasty rose cigarettes that he got through. And I think you'd watch that and you'd be like, oh, how's he even doing it? Because in every scene there's a fag hanging out of his mouth. So, you know.
Okay, speaking of what are supposed to be family programs, Coronation Street is, I think, supposedly a family event, or is it? It's on a 7:30 in the evening. Mm. It certainly isn't when you have the rape storyline, David Platt's rape storyline. We're going to play a clip from this. Just again, so in case actually people might be offended listening for your children in the car. This is a male rape storyline. It's led to 200 complaints to Ofcom, the regulator in the UK. This is where, from Coronation Street, David Plant confronts Josh, but is astounded by his lack of remorse.
Blowing up 1 minute, cold the next. I thought you had more to you.
You're not saying I imagined it then?
Me? No. You're the one trying to rewrite history. I love you, man.
Shut your face.
You're all over me like a rash. Now suddenly you've all gone all caveman.
I'm not gay, all right? Fact. And saying that doesn't make me a caveman.
Gay by shmai. It was just a laugh.
Do I look like I'm laughing?
Mate, you're like a... You're not the same person. That's all I'm saying.
You spiked me.
If that's what you need to believe.
You did, you spiked me.
Mate, you sank about 10 pints. You're doing shots for England. You're trying to sneak a vodka in my lager like some 15-year-old joker.
This is more than just hangover.
Well, that's funny, I feel fine.
Believe me, you don't wake up like this after one too many beers.
A few drops of GHB.
You admit it?
To loosen us up, both of us. It's no biggie. I'll just say the drama. We were both wasted. We both wanted it.
Really unsavoury stuff.
Well, look, I just think, as you said before, you know, soaps, they do deal in relentless misery, but they also manage to push sensitive topics into the mainstream and elicit, you know, difficult conversations and raise awareness to, you know, topics that people mightn't have had before. And I think with Coronation Street, they had Bethany's grooming storyline recently, and that went on months and months of preparation and a very slow burn to the actual events that happened. And they worked with people within those situations to get the best, you know, to be credible. And the same goes for this storyline itself. They've been working really closely with Survivors Manchester, which is a charity that deals, you know, with male victims of rape and sexual assault. And I think Jonathan Harvey was the writer that was, you know, challenged with actually doing these episodes. And he's a, you know, vintage Corrie writer, and he's in a safe pair of hands with him, because I think they really did it respectfully and sensitively, whereas Corrie have fallen down previously with regards to, you know, female rape. And I think there was a whole jamboree years ago when, the you know, someone like Toya Battersby, who is a beloved character, she was raped, and they treated it as if it was a whodunit. They used to have, like, you know, adverts flashing up going, "Who raped Toya?" And it was not handled well. So I think they've learned from their mistakes and they've gotten the charities involved, and it's a better way of doing things.
Louise, I haven't watched soaps in a long time just because of the working hours here. I used to watch Coronation Street, a bit of EastEnders. But I always thought I preferred Coronation Street because it wasn't the grimness of EastEnders. It was always more humorous, put you in a better frame of mind.
Okay,
maybe they're doing storylines like this for quite a while now, but that wouldn't be what I would associate with Coronation Street.
Well, there's light and dark always with Coronation Street. They will handle those heavy topics, and then you'll have some carry on in the Rovers or whatever it is they get up to. They have the full spectrum, but they've always handled those big topics, like you say, the grooming topic, teen pregnancy, whatever it is, they've been doing them. But there's been a lot about this, and I think, you know, they set out to do this to, you know, obviously to create a storyline, but also to raise awareness. There were a lot of complaints to Ofcom, but also a 1,700% increase in calls for people asking for help. And that's really, you know, what people should focus on. The people who are dealing with this watched this and sought help, you know, in their masses.
And I think when you discuss something as to, like, what is, you know, seen as taboo with male rape or sexual assault, it can upset people, like you've seen with the Ofcom complaints. Whereas I think the same storyline with a female character is almost just a familiar trope these days. Yeah. And that's depressing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get picks of the week. Jennifer, what have you gone for?
Well, you know, we can spend so long fiddling around on Netflix and never find anything to watch. Now, this is something to watch on Netflix. It's called Wild Wild Country, and it came out last weekend, and it's a new docuseries, and it's produced by the uber talented Duplass brothers, and it centres on this Indian guru, the Bhagwan Rajneesh, who had this growing number of followers in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, and he attempted to take over a whole town in Oregon, and they wanted to build their own utopia. And it's so gripping. There's just parts in the documentary that will just leave you absolutely stunned and your jaw will drop. And anybody who's interested in the Rajneesh movement, there was a brilliant book released about 10 years ago by the Guardian journalist Tim Guest. It's called My Life in Orange, and it's about how his mother got sucked into the cult. And I mean, this was basically normal people that were in Britain and Australia got really sucked into this and moved to India and then moved to America and tried to take over this whole town. And it's amazing.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. You've gone, and I like what you do here, Louise, you've gone back for a programme that people maybe have missed a couple of years ago, which has now gone up on Netflix, because they still do that. It's not all new original productions from Netflix. They do occasionally buy in series that have been broadcast elsewhere.
And thank you, because I felt a little bit behind the times. So yeah, no, that was my intention, to bring in something older. But no, I started watching Line of Duty. I finished the first series. I'm on the second series. I don't know why I'm drawn to these gritty police dramas at the moment, like Marcella, and this is brilliant. It features Adrian Dunbar and Vicky McClure, and they are just incredible actors. It's really there's nothing pretty about this. It's all about police corruption, and made by the BBC. Incredible production.
You're a fan of this as well,
love
Jennifer.
The Line of Duty, and I think the one of the producers and one of the screenwriters has actually done a new series for Sky called Save Me, which is also really compelling. Very dark, though. With Saran Jones, who's amazing. And like, they work with great female actresses. I think someone like Vicky McClure, who's done This Is England, and she's a powerhouse. Her character in Line of Duty just gets better and better. And it's one of those things that sucks you in, and it's cliffhanger every time. Very dramatic.
The Wages Bill for Stranger Things 3. I don't know when it's coming out, but there's a suggestion that Millie Bobby Brown, the young star who was a guest on this programme about a year and a half ago, that she's going to get over $300,000 an episode.
She is going to be on a par with Winona Ryder and David Harbour. So she's on a par with her adult co-stars, rather than the other kids, which will be getting around what did they say, 200,000? Yeah. Which is ridiculous for anybody to earn, let alone a 13-year-old. And I think we've not learned from our mistakes. When we're talking about child stars, they are pushing her into a place where she shouldn't be, I think. And already you've seen her on red carpet appearances on her own, whereas all the rest of the kids have to appear together in a group. She's being singled out. She's being touted by fashion designers dressed in a very adult way. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, her parents are her agents. Are we seeing another Lindsay Lohan again?
Well, one of her co-stars, the lead guy who plays
Finn,
he has spoken out about it. He said, you know, it's a dangerous area for her to exist in, and she needs to be looked after now.
And he also spoke out about being sexualized. He was like, I am a child, and which is great. He's spoken out about a lot for a kid like that young. He's got really good head on his shoulders, as in he actually, you know, moved agencies because someone in the agency was accused of sexual assault. And he also spoke out about child sexualization. So I think, you know, it may be a divergent path for the two of them. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. But I would hope with Millie Bobby Brown, someone puts the brakes on, or someone like Winona Ryder could give her some advice about being
fast.
A young star.
Because Winona Ryder had a tough time for a while.
I was trying to find another child actor who had a comparable wage. The only guy was 2.5 Men. The kid was Jake. Mm. He was earning $350,000 an episode. And, you know, he kind of went off the tracks a little bit.
I wonder how much was Shirley Temple paid in her time?
She was paid $5 and
shillings.
Some dancing shoes.
And she ended up, wasn't it, as an American ambassador to some Central American country afterwards as an adult. Anyway, we have to leave it there. Louise Duffy will be on with Lost in Music just after 7 o'clock here on Today FM this evening. Looking forward to that. Jennifer Gannon, thank you as well for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.